Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Hennessy Financials call. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. It is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Rob Corsi. Sir, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, John. And hi, I'm Rob Corsi, the sales director for the Hennessy Funds. I'd like to start by welcoming you to today's call featuring the portfolio managers of our two financial funds. That's Dave Ellison and Ryan Kelly. Now, Dave Ellison has more than 20 years' experience, and we're proud to mention that he's the most tenured portfolio manager in the financial sector. His co-manager on the fund, Ryan Kelly, also has more than 20 years of industry experience, and has been working on these funds since 2013. Today, our focus is on why financials are poised to outperform in an improving economy. But before we kick it off, two quick things. First, if you're not familiar with the Hennessy Funds, our family is comprised of 16 mutual funds offering various concentrated high active share solutions for both core and satellite positions. Currently, we have just over $4 billion in assets under management. And for more information, please visit us at hennessyfunds.com. Now, second, today's call is going to last about 25 minutes, and it will be in a Q&A format. We would like to thank everyone who submitted their questions to us in advance. We did try to include as many as possible on the call today. Now, with that, let's get started. And Dave, I'd like to start with you.
Okay.
Can you kick things off by discussing how small and large cap banks fared over the past year, from the beginning of the pandemic through this month, April 2021?
Well, thanks, Rob, and good afternoon to everybody who's listening. Again, I'm Dave Ellison, and along with Ryan Kelly, who you'll hear from as well, we run the two financial funds at Hennessy. And to respond to the first question, I think the industry as a whole, with the help of fiscal and monetary policy, have come through the pandemic quite well. Fundamentally, the companies never lost money, even though they posted a lot of reserves. And that has allowed them to, in a sense, retrieve reserves recently in the most recent quarters. But net-net, the industry has done quite well. They've obviously benefited by the decline in rates, which has to some degree been offset by the decline in mortgage rates. But net-net, it's been interesting to see how the industry has really responded. And this most recent quarter was very strong from an earnings perspective, and the outlook remains, pretty good as we go forward here, driven by a lot of long-term trends and things in the economy, which we'll discuss as we go along the call.
Great. I mean, healthy balance sheets is definitely what investors want to hear. Now, I'd like to ask you a few questions, Ryan. Can you start by sharing with us the performance of the various subsectors in the financial industry since the beginning of the pandemic as well?
Sure, Rob. If we look back to before the pandemic, say December 31st of 2019 until now, financials have underperformed the overall market. Financials are up about 20%, and the S&P is up 32%. But when we look at the subsectors, we see a lot of significant variability and volatility within those subsectors. Interestingly, and not surprisingly, certain companies and certain subsectors have done exceptionally well during the pandemic. And these are companies that are in the fintech space, companies that are transaction-oriented, companies that are markets-related. So that's, companies such as PayPal and Square, Mastercard, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs. They've all done well during that time period. For banks, however, in general, it was a different story. They got hit very hard in the beginning. And as Dave mentioned, with potential issues around asset quality problems, as well as extremely low rates last summer, they never really recovered much at all in spring or summer of last year. But they had a dramatic turnaround in performance starting in the third quarter of last year and into the first quarter of this year as well. So if we look at performance since September 30 of last year to now, as of last night, the S&P is up 25%, financials up 50%, large banks up 75%, and community and regional banks up the most, up 100% during that time period.
Definitely some impressive performance there. Next, Ryan, regional and community banks. They have delivered strong performance this year so far. Maybe you can talk to the audience about how the valuations today compare to them historically.
Sure. Well, you know, given this really strong performance, I guess the question is, are they still attractive on a valuation point of view? And we believe that they are. They are still, from a valuation point of view, attractive both on a historical basis and certainly versus, you know, relative to the S&P 500. We look at both price to tangible book value as well as PE for the space. The median price to tangible book value for these regional community banks is about 1.7 times right now, which is back to where we were at the end of 2019 and still slightly below the long-term 10-year average. What's more compelling, though, is on a PE basis, they're trading at 14 times this year's estimate, and that's versus the S&P at 24 times. So on a relative basis, about 59% of the S&P, which we think is compelling. We think versus the long term, it's still trading at a discount to the long-term averages. And so, you know, despite this pretty incredible performance in the last 6 months, it was more of a catch-up rather than getting ahead of where the rest of the market is.
Definitely. Thank you, Ryan. I'd like to get back to you, though, Dave, and I'd like to, you know, ask if you can talk to us about the impact of the recent steepening of the yield curve for both small and large cap banks.
Well, I think that, you know, as we've seen the performance of the group, you know, really beginning in the fourth quarter of last year and continuing to some degree into this year, a big catalyst for that was the growing belief that rates were bottoming out and that we were going to see a better economy and therefore a better environment to make loans with a higher spread. And I think that is, you know, that's the long-term, one of the big sort of long-term positives for the group. And I think if you look at the numbers or the fundamentals of the business, in most cases, you know, most banks get at least half of their net revenues from the margin or the difference between the loans and the deposits. So this NIM issue that's been out there, if you've been following financials and how they've done at all in the last, you know, couple of years, the NIM is a very important part of their fundamental earnings stream. Even for a JP Morgan, it's roughly half. And if you go to a smaller bank, it can be 75 to 80% of their net revenues, and therefore their net profits are coming from the NIM. So this is a very important metric. And, you know, our belief is that, you know, we're at the low end of the range on rates, obviously, you know, it seems like the whole world is, but the yield curves are also at a low ebb. And so the assumption we're making is over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, the economies are going to improve, the actions of central banks around the world and governments, especially ours, is going to generate enough activity to let rates go back up enough to generate, you know, some higher NIMs, which again impacts roughly half of their earnings stream.
Sure, sure. Now, Dave, many of the pandemic era limits that were set by the Federal Reserve have ended, or they're going to end soon. You know, when we talk about things like restrictions on dividends and buybacks, how do you think this will impact the large banks in particular?
Well, the large banks have been dealing with a fairly strict regulatory control cycle really since 2008, and we all know why that happened. And the results have been, you know, reasonably good in the sense that the banks have become liquid, they've rebuilt capital, they've built the earnings. You know, obviously they performed well through the pandemic, provided, you know, loans and liquidity to the system. So I think this is, to me, the real issue here is whether this is the beginning of a less restrictive regulatory regime And I think that is probably, you know, it's not going to go back to the way it was in 2005, 6, and 7. But I think the talk out of the Fed and to some degree out of the federal government is that we need to, you know, take away some of these really restrictive controls on leverage, the type of loans they can make, the size of the loans they can make, the liquidity they have to keep. And all of these will generally be incremental to their ability to make money and their ability to have a higher NIM and higher non-interest income. So I think the, you know, dividends and buybacks are fine, but it's these other things that are going to be more impactful as we go along here the next 3 to 5 years.
No, very interesting given the Democratic-led executive office. Now, I do have another question for you, Dave, before we get back to Ryan. You know, pandemic-induced loan losses haven't been as drastic as I think we all expected, leaving many of the bigger banks sitting on large untapped reserves. As a sector with already healthy balance sheets, what do you think these big banks should do with this extra cash?
Well, I know what they'd want to do. They want to lend it out, and they want to get a higher margin because, again, it comes back to that's half of their earnings stream. And that's what I think the industry is waiting for. I mean, the industry has record liquidity if you look at history, and it's sitting there waiting for this economy to get better, for the Fed to be a little less accommodative so they can fill in the difference. They're looking for the consumer, you know, and all these things to come back. And I think that's the play here, is that we're going to have a much better environment the next 3 to 5 years, and that's going to allow them to use this excess liquidity that they've built up. And, of course, on top of that, you're going to probably have larger dividends. You're going to have a fairly aggressive buyback regime, and you're going to have, I think, a tremendous amount of M&A activity, not so much in the big, big ones, but as you drop down to the middle third. And then you're going to start to get some growth in loans, which have really struggled for the last couple of years. So all these things are going to drive the earnings. And, of course, the assumption is if we can have a portfolio of the best companies, we're hopefully going to do reasonably well.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Very informative. So, Ryan, I do want to ask you another question. You know, earlier Dave mentioned a less restrictive regulatory regime, but can you just tell the audience how might a Biden administration affect the M&A activity for small to mid-sized banks?
Well, sure. I mean, just first of all, broadly, M&A has come back this year, and if people were watching last year, activity essentially came to a screeching halt during the pandemic. But really, in the last month and a half, we've seen continued activity. In fact, last week we came in and saw four big, sizable, nice deals in a matter of 2 days. So M&A activity is back. Now, as far as this idea that, you know, what this current administration could mean, you know, different regulation or increased regulation, and that could mean, therefore, more M&A activity. Perhaps that could be the case, but, you know, we've watched this space for many, many years now, and usually the reasons for a company to be selling out is there's many other factors involved. There's they're challenged on some sort of a growth prospect. There's anemic growth prospects, and there's increased competition. They may be challenged by the interest rate environment. There might be asset quality issues. Even the age of the CEO and the board is a big factor in when these companies will sell out. So, you know, again, those are probably more important than just the regulatory environment. But right now, M&A activity is returning, and it's accelerating. This year, we have 51 deals announced so far, $25 billion in aggregate deal value through yesterday. And that puts us on pace, if we continue that pace, to get back to the 2016, 2017, 2018 metrics that we've seen. And yet we still have a little bit more to go on valuations. The takeout valuations are still at a discount to where they were 5 and 10 years ago. So, you know, this idea, this consolidation of the industry has certainly been a major driver for the funds that we run, more specifically for the Hennessy Small Cap Financial Fund. And, you know, we think that it's, this year is just starting the engine again, and we should see that going forward again as well.
Great. Thank you, Ryan. That's good to hear. Now, I do have a few more questions for you, Dave, and I'd like to start with addressing what we're seeing with online banking. Online banking was boosted by the government-mandated pandemic closures. How do you think this trend is going to be impacted by the reopening of the economy?
Well, I think that, again, people are believing that the reopening of the economy will obviously, will improve transaction volume. So if you've grown your online banking presence, you'll generate higher transactions. And if you, recently we've had, MasterCard and Visa report, and, the numbers are pretty good in terms of their projections and outlooks. So just as an example of what online banking will do. But again, this is a very, online banking is a very low cost, high margin business for the banking industry, not just, Visa and MasterCard, but even, companies like Bank America and JP Morgan, and then you throw in, the PayPals and the Squares and the Global Payments, and even somebody like Apple or Google who have a financial, payment system. So this is all about transaction volume, and obviously they fell, those transaction volumes fell significantly, and now that they build their way back, this will help the earnings stream and offset some of the pressure that they've had on margins and loan growth. So again, the economy gets better, these companies are all going to benefit, and so are a lot of other companies, obviously, in the market.
Good. So, Dave, another hot topic or trend in this space would be fintech. What's your opinion on fintech and those payment technology companies?
Well, this is I think the other point here, these two questions are kind of similar, but I think in we think of fintech and we all sort of know those names, and they've done quite well the last 2 or 3 years, and are a pretty, big part of our large cap fund, and have been a good reason why that fund has done as well as it's done in the last 18, 24 months. But I think the real bigger issue here is that this is a threat to the industry as we knew it, 5 or 10 years ago. They're taking customers. This is a high margin business, financial transactions. And so this industry threat is going to force change. It's going to force M&A. It's going to force action. And that's what we want. These companies have been sitting around for almost a decade, not really being threatened by anything, and a lot of people not wanting to be in the business because they were too afraid of the business, the credit, the regulatory structure. And now I think what you're realizing is that there is high profits here, and these other sort of non-financial companies, non-traditional financial companies are going after it. And this is going to force activity, and this is what we need, because that's going to, force business models to change finally after many, many years of really not having to do anything. So I think this is all a very positive development. And the more Apple and Google and Square and PayPal get into the business, the better it is for these companies, because they're either going to have to do something to combat it or sell. And the goal here is to obviously create a portfolio that's going to benefit from that as well.
Yeah, I mean, evolution, action amongst the banks, that sounds like a great thing for investors. Dave, large banks certainly have done well, particularly in areas like trading, investment banking, and even asset management over the last year. What are your thoughts on these business lines?
Well, these are, I think most people consider these business lines as, they serve the customer, they horizontally and vertically integrate the bank into different businesses, but these are not, really high multiple businesses, because a lot of them are not repetitive. And so there's not a lot of repeat business. If you're doing investment banking, you don't do a Facebook every quarter IPO. You don't do these big IPOs. You have to find the next company, next company, next company. So, but I do think the business has consolidated, and I think there's been more consolidation in investment banking than there has in traditional banking. And so there you see bigger companies controlling more market share, and therefore they can control their costs. And the business has become, in general, more profitable across the board. So this is where I think the whole industry is going. And again, in terms of consolidation and you know, focusing on the cost structures and all the things that make them profitable and trying to create more repetitive businesses. So I think if you look at the most highly valued financials, they tend to be in asset management where you have repetitive business and not in stock trading. So, you know, this is a trend that's been good now, but I think ultimately it's a business that needs to consolidate and be de-emphasized in the industry. Hello?
Sorry about that. That's a lot of good information there, Dave. Sorry about that. I think I lost my connection there. But Ryan, I want to get back to you and ask you about the Hennessy Small Cap Financial Fund, along with the Hennessy Large Cap Financial Fund. Both of those are fairly concentrated strategies with anywhere from 20 to 40 holdings each. You know, can you talk to the audience about the benefits of running an active, concentrated portfolio in the sector?
Sure. You know, we really think that what we're doing here is trying to find sort of the best companies within our universe of investable companies. So we add value and potentially outperformance by running highly concentrated, high conviction portfolios in these financial funds. Both funds have a fraction of the number of companies in their in the funds versus the benchmark. Then we have a bottoms-up approach to investing. We look at companies on a fundamental basis. We look at 400, 500 companies every quarter, and we really want to own the best ones that we can and hopefully get outperformance. We are aware, certainly, that with a more highly concentrated portfolio, that can mean higher risk as well. But the way that we mitigate risk in these portfolios is not by owning a whole bunch of names, but by rather owning good companies with solid balance sheets, good geographical areas, solid asset quality, all of the things that would hopefully, in a downturn, help them perform better than their peers.
Great. Thank you, Ryan. Now, I do have one last question, and I'll ask this one to you, Dave. And I'll just say, you know, what's your outlook for the financials industry for the remainder of the year or looking forward?
Well, I think I'd like to make an observation and then just sort of go through a list of sort of positives of the industry right now. And the observation is that, you know, we've come through a pretty severe, obviously quick downturn. But typically when the industry, the financial industry goes through a downturn, they come out the other side in a difficult position. They've got non-performers, they've lost capital, in some cases they may have lost money, a fair amount of money. You know, they're struggling to get back on size and get their reserves up and get their bad loans written down. And so they don't really participate for a while. And here, this time around, we have an industry that, while there was a downturn, they actually got stronger into the downturn. Because they over-reserved, they didn't have the losses, and now they've got massive reserves, massive liquidity, and they're sitting there ready to participate in the recovery that we're seeing. And you're seeing that to some degree in the earnings of the companies that have reported. But if we look at sort of going forward, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, you have a number of things to kind of tick off, and that would, you know, help them in some way. One obviously is the regulations that are probably going to be loosened up a bit, but you're not going to see a significant re-regulation of the industry into even more of a straitjacket than they've been in. Secondly is liquidity. Liquidity is very high. That gives them a lot of flexibility to participate in the recovery without having to, let's say, pay up for deposits or go out and borrow a bunch of money. So they've got all the money they need. They just need to find people that want to borrow it. We've talked about buybacks. They're going to come back. They're probably going to be bigger than people think. I think we're going to see bigger dividends, especially out of the bigger companies. And I think if you look at the next thing would be sort of the expense structures. Everybody's looking at expense structures to drive ROEs higher. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that as we go forward. Next would be fintech. We talked about that. That's a major threat to the industry, and it will force change and activity, and that's what we want. Next is M&A. I think there's going to be a lot of M&A. There's already been a lot this year where companies realize they need to get bigger to compete. You can't compete as a $5 billion bank. You've got to be $30, $40, $50, $100 billion to be even in the game. Loan demand has been very bad. I've never seen it this weak. And I've been doing this for, 30 plus years. So the hope is that, as the economy picks up, loan demand will pick up, and that will allow them to obviously grow the portfolio and grow their income, the loan income. And finally, rates. Rates have been a big headwind for a long time. They've worked through that. They've made adjustments on the expense side. They've made adjustments on the loan side. And now any improvement in the yield curve over the next 3 to 5 years, even if it's, again, we don't need rates. We don't need mortgage rates to go to 8%. We need mortgage rates to go to 3 or 3.5%. Then you'll have a very significant improvement in the margin, which is obviously, as I said before, about half of their income will then start to really move up. And I think that the policies of the Fed, the policies of the federal government, not only here but around the world, is to generate economic activity. And I think that's going to lift rates just enough to make a difference and also improve loan demand. So there's a lot of things that are out there that can happen. It's not going to happen next week, but I think the next 3 to 5 years will be an interesting time for the space.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, thank you. A lot of great information today, and thank you for sharing your thoughts with all of us. On behalf of the Hennessy Funds, I want to thank all of the listeners for joining us. We look forward to working with you, and we hope that you'll consider both the Hennessy Large Cap Financial Fund and the Hennessy Small Cap Financial Fund as a part of your clients' portfolios. For more information, please visit us at HennessyFunds.com, or you can call our advisor line at 1-800-890-7118. Again, that phone number is 800-890-7118. Thank you again, and have a great evening.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude today's conference call. You may disconnect your phone lines at this time and have a wonderful day. Thank you for your participation.